Paso a paso el largo andar terminará, terminará. Piedra más piedra, un arco son, solas no, solos no. Uno más uno, todos unidos, todo podemos lograr. Gotas de agua, un río son, solas no, solos no. Step by step, the longest march can be won, can be won. And many stones can form an arch, singly none. And by union, what we will can be accomplished still. And drops of water turn a mill, singly none, singly none. Step by step, the longest march can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly none, singly none. Step by step, the longest march can be won, can be won, can be won.
Join the Spy, Judy Gorman with
Ganesh.
And I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and Building Bridges is bringing you an exclusive of sound from Judy Gorman. And when you get her music, which you must have, you can do it easily, you need to go to www.cdbaby.com/Judy Gorman. www.cdbaby.com/Judy Gorman. And we're going to give you that information again, but we thank our sister for being with us and lending her inspiration and verbiage. Judy Gorman, our sister cultural worker, always there, step by step, working with the masses to rise up and claim social justice, install social justice, change the paradigm in this country and return the power to the workers who create all the wealth. Did you have fun at the Million Worker March?
I really did have fun. It was a very beautiful day, and it was wonderful to see other people I know from some very diverse organizing efforts all over the country, other musicians. One of the things about being a musician is you get to see flight attendants more than you get to see other musicians. It's a similar kind of job. You have to make it look like glamour, but it's a lot of work as well. But there are some wonderful musicians who I got to see. Dave Littman was there, and Ngoma was there. And it was wonderful to see people coming out for really important issues that I don't hear talked about on TV or radio or in mainstream newspapers anywhere as much as I'd like to. So that was exciting, and I want to see it lead to a lot more serious organizing. I met some interesting young people from places like South Carolina.
And that is Judy Gorman, and she was one of the cultural workers who was part of the Million Worker March. And, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't look at one of the most odious employers in the world. Can you imagine a time when a 30-year-old woman was paid less than a 20-year-old man because he has a family to support? When promotion was settled at hunting parties and strippers performed at executive events? Well, unfortunately, Liza Featherstone isn't writing a history book. She's describing the reality of over a 500,000 women who work for Walmart today. And with that, we'd like to welcome you. And, of course, Liza has an important new book, which is called Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Workers' Rights at Walmart. And good morning.
Good morning.
Liza, the book is about the class discrimination suit that we heard about a couple months ago, and, of course, the working conditions at Walmart. Why don't you preface the book, give us an introduction to where the book is coming from.
Well, the book details the charges in Dukes versus Walmart, which is the largest civil rights class action suit in history, representing 1.6 million women, past and present employees of Walmart. And they're charging Walmart with discrimination in pay, promotions, and training opportunities. And so the book details the charges in the lawsuit, the stories of the women who are bringing it, and also tries to encourage the public to look more critically at Walmart's business model, which is giving the customer the lowest price at any cost, and those costs include workplace fairness and equality.
Walmart is in the news a lot and has gotten a lot of very, very critical attention. I mean, these are not the only complaints against Walmart. There's overtime rules that they don't honor. There's locking employees in. There's health and safety. Why don't you broaden it out a bit in terms of the other kinds of deficits that Walmart treats its workers?
Absolutely. I mean, well, this goes back to their business model, low prices at any possible and maximum profits at any possible cost, and those costs include workers' other labor rights. As you mentioned, workers' overtime rights. Workers have been locked into the store and forbidden to leave, sometimes overnight. And immigrant workers, Walmart is right now being charged by the federal government with conspiracy to violate immigrant workers' rights. Some of these people had to work 7 days in a row without a break because Walmart was taking advantage of their precarious immigrant status. So this is really across the board a violator of workers' rights.
And we should say that Walmart is the most profitable company in the world, and Walmart is the largest private employer in the United States and in Mexico with over 1,600 stores. But the book, I must say that it reminded me of Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, which, of course, were great revelations about the disgusting practices of the meatpacking industry for the consumer and the workers. Well, your book is of a very similar nature for me. It's a white-collar reality, but the revelations about Walmart through the story of one of the women, etc., who became a plaintiff in the Walmart suit. Tune us into that, because that was, it just crystallized things. It's a great reading story.
These stories, some of them are really amazing. I mean, there was a woman, Stephanie Odell, a young woman in Texas, you know, very ambitious to rise in the company. You know, she found a pay stub of a male coworker and discovered he was making $8,000 a year more than she was doing exactly the same job. And, you know, she said to her manager, "Hey, you know, why is this?" And the manager said, you know, and this is a single woman expecting her first child. The manager said, you know, he's got a family to support, you know, and that story in particular sounds like, you know, just a singular story that would happen to one person. Women in this case have given testimony to being told exactly that. Many, many other single mothers have been given that line.
And what encouraged you to take on the story of Walmart's women workers, and how did you gain access? Because there's very forthcoming information, and there seems an intimacy that you developed, which is very engaging as well.
Oh, I appreciate that. I had been writing about the labor movement and labor organizing for a while. I had written about Walmart workers, about McDonald's workers, the lack of unions in McDonald's and efforts by workers. And, you know, I had written about the Students Against Sweatshops movement, you know, and just, you know, covered different labor movements over the years. And I was really interested in Walmart because it is, as you point out, the largest, most profitable retailer, and such a destructive business model and such an obstacle to workers' progress in this country. So I had been tracking them for a while, you know, really thinking I needed to pay some close attention to them. And then when this lawsuit was first filed, I was really compelled by the women's charges and by the potential story. And yeah, as for access, people really want to tell their stories. I mean, people really do. I mean, and workers are just not often listened to in this culture. I mean, you think we have this sort of tell-all Oprah culture where anyone can go on TV and tell their story, but workers' stories of the kinds of trauma they experience in the workplace are not really part of our public conversation in the same way that personal trauma is, and people do really want to talk about it.
The centrality of Walmart, it's sort of like General Motors in the 1930s in the auto industry and the need for organization. And this lawsuit by a number of law firms, I believe from the West Coast, women's law firms, is central to the fight Walmart. But what we don't see is any successes in organizing and unionization. Did you get any clues from the workers as to where that is and what could be done?
Well, I think that... I did. I mean, part of the problem is Walmart really makes union busting a top priority. I mean, they have internal documents, manuals that say preventing union organizing should be a goal equal to all other goals in the organization. So it is just as important as selling pants and lawnmowers is busting the union. You know, I mean, it is really, really a top priority. So they will do anything. They will fire workers for union organizing. They will spy on workers. And these things are illegal, but they're happy to just pay the fines. Because ultimately they feel like it keeps their costs down to keep a union out of their workplace, and it's worth, you know, going to court sometimes and you know being slapped on the wrist by the government now and then. So I would say that is really the secret to why there's no union at Walmart. And when the labor movement and really the entire progressive movement as a whole makes organizing Walmart a top priority in the same way, I do think it can happen.
I had this fantasy that Kerry in the debates on domestic issues would pick up a copy of your book, physically wave it, and say, this is a company that you love to hate, because certainly we need jobs, but their preclusion of the right to organize and a reactionary National Labor Relations Board, particularly one that would be under the Bush administration, has got to go. It's as American as apple pie, the right to organize. But he didn't.
He didn't.
And it was such an obvious opportunity. So in terms of the book, when we'll get back to its content, but why didn't he? I mean, what do you hope to accomplish with this book? Why shouldn't he have used this as a wonderful, palatable, uncontroversial example of extolling the rights of work and workers?
Well, absolutely, he should have.
I don't hold you accountable, mind you, for the Kerry administration.
Absolutely, he should have.
She's a pretty big employer herself.
Yes, but she, you know, she talks about women's rights a lot, and I thought she might be interested. But you know, Kerry did talk about Walmart during the primary. He did talk about how it was shameful that such a profitable company would pay its workers so badly, and mentioned the fact that many of them depend on public assistance. And Walmart put out a very sharp statement immediately saying, somebody better do their homework before he's allowed to talk about Walmart again. Now, he had done his homework. He was right about the facts. But I think there was a certain intimidation. Walmart has recently become a major player in Washington. They've got lobbyists. They've become a major campaign contributor, mostly to Republicans, but some Democrats, and I think there may have been some intimidation. Also, though, I mean, I think that it's quite possible that because Walmart has this image of being a company for ordinary folks, where are the ordinary American shops, it's quite possible that no matter how populist what he said about Walmart might have been, if he had brought that up in the debates, the Republicans might well have turned it around and said, see, he's so elitist, he even hates Walmart. They might have turned it around in some way.
But there are communities that have actually organized against Walmart.
Absolutely.
Right? There are communities around the country that have organized as well as the workers.
And, of course, he could have said that at least 40% of the cost of the health care insurance of the Walmart workers is paid by the workers. And he could have said that it tells its workers to apply for food stamps and Medicare. People might not have been so empathetic with that.
Yes. I think certainly people would be very disturbed to know that. And, it would have been very powerful if he had raised that in the debate. And he talked about equal pay, as an issue for women, which is not often brought up by national politicians. So, he certainly, there were plenty of places he could have brought
it
up.
So I dare say there'll be another opportunity for a Million Worker March, this time with a million workers subsequent to the election, because no matter who is in it, it's clear that the working class must advocate for their own agenda independent of either of the parties.
That's exactly right.
What else should we know about the wonderful book that we encourage our listeners to read? And we are speaking with Liza Firestone, Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Women's for Workers' Rights at Walmart.
Well, I think also there's also in the book a look at the Walmart culture, and I really tried to understand, in part, what is the appeal to workers. I mean, there is in the book a real tension in how badly workers are treated by Walmart, and yet how loyal many of them still are to the company. I mean, even many of the women bringing the suit say they would like to, some of them who don't work at Walmart anymore, would like to go back and work at Walmart if it were changed, if the suit succeeded in reforming the company. And some of them still work at the company. Some of them, Betty Dukes, the lead plaintiff in the suit, still works at the company. So I tried to understand that as well, and the way that the way that people can really be very dedicated to their jobs despite what they encounter and the unfairness that they encounter. People can be very dedicated to their jobs and even enjoy aspects of them. And that's not to say it's okay that Walmart treats its workers so horribly. It's not okay at all. It in fact says, these people are really giving everything, to their jobs, and Walmart should really reward them much better.
I know that there are service employees unions talking about giving massive amounts of money to the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, who are trying to organize Walmart in this
That's
country,
right.
And one of the Canadian Walmart plants has been unionized. But what would it take to unionize Walmart at this point?
Well, that's, we expect that answer.
Million-dollar question.
Yeah,
million-worker question.
I certainly wish I had the answer to that question. I thought it was great that they kicked in $1 million. And that was that's specifically for the purpose of coordinating efforts around Walmart, which is terrific because, as Judy mentioned, there are many communities organizing against Walmart and many small local efforts to fight Walmart. And that $1 million is supposed to be directed toward a kind of a clearinghouse, a way that people can share information and coordinate their efforts. So, no, I really commend that. I think that's the beginning of a more movement-wide concerted effort, and that is the kind of thing it's going to take, a lot of cooperation, a lot of solidarity.
Mm-hmm. Liza Featherstone, who has been a long-time advocate of labor rights and a writer, where can people get Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Workers' Rights at Walmart?
You can order it now from basicbooks.com. You can order an advance copy, and it should get to you pretty quickly.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you've been listening to Liza Featherstone, author, and we've been looking at the issue of Walmart, and we're going to lend the voice, aside from Liza Firestone and myself, Mimi Rosenberg, and
Ganesh.
We're going to lend another voice to that, Workers of the World Unite, Judy Gorman.
Grandma taught me to act real nice, smile politely and hide my eyes. Never angry thoughts came to my mind. Grandma did what she had to do, but the times changed, I'm telling you. Time has come for us to draw the line. Don't wait too late. Open up your eyes and talk back, fight back. Time to organize. Time to organize. The floor boss, he's the boss's son. He thinks he owns everyone, just like his daddy owned us all before. I don't care about his college degree. That man ain't one bit better than me. And I ain't gonna take his lip no more. Don't wait too late. Open up your eyes. Talk back, fight back. It's time to organize. Floor boss, he's the boss's son. Thinks he owns everyone, like his daddy owned us all before. Grandma worked in the weaving room. She coughed politely, she watched her loom. Paycheck bought her soul, and it cost her life. I work hard to get my pay, but I never sold my rights away. And I am standing up for my grandma and her pride. So don't wait too late. Open up your eyes and talk back, fight back. It's time to organize, time to organize.
Judy Gorman, who else? Lovely, lovely. And as we have time to organize, we thank very much both of you for being with us, and we thank all of you for listening and lifting up the issue of working people. And what can we say, Judy Gorman, you have helped radiate. You have brought forward the issues in a lyrical and magnificent way, and the music of Judy Gorman is available through www.cdbaby.com/Judy Gorman, www.cdbaby.com/Judy Gorman. It has been so special to have you. And a quick last word?
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here. It's an honor. I'm on tour now, and actually, and I tell you, there's more support for the kind of working people's agenda than the major media know.
Thanks, Judy.
And I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nesh.
It's been a pleasure to be with you. Workers of the World Unite. Judy Gorman.
Spent my whole life making somebody rich. Jenny left me to die like a dog in a ditch. And he told me I'm all used up. He used up my labor. He used up my time. He plundered my body and squandered my mind. And he left me a pension of handouts and wine. And he told me I'm all used up. My kids are in hock to a guy you call work.
slaving their lives out for some other jerk. My youngest in Frisco just made shipping clerk, and he don't know I'm all used up. Some people reaching for power and gold, they don't have respect for anything old. For pennies they're bought, for promises sold. Someday they'll be all used up. They use up the oil and they use up the trees. They use up the air and they use up the seas. Well, how about you, friend? How about me? What's left when we're all used up? I'll live out my life in this crummy hotel, lousy with bugs, my God, what a smell. But my plumbing still works, clear as a bell. No, I'm not all used up. Outside my window, the world passes by. It gives me a handout, spits in my eye, and no one can tell me, no one knows why I'm living if I'm all used up. Sometimes in my dreams I sit by a tree. Kids gather round and they listen to me. My life is a book, how things used to be. No, I'm not all used up. There's songs and there's laughter, there's things I can do. All that I learned I would give back to you. And I'd give my last breath just to make it come true. No, I'm not all used up. They use up the oil and they use up the trees. They use up the air and they use up the seas. Well, how about you, friend? How about me? What's left when we're all used up? When rich folks act like poor folks, poor folks eat like rich. When old folks take the high road, no one's in the ditch. When mothers and fathers around the world can rear their children strong. When everyone in every land can sing a freedom song. And we'll have peace, then we'll have peace. So peace is based on love and trust, thus no man lives on man. And all shall own their native soil, though it is ancient land. And peace is based on tolerance, thus all shall be heard. Goodwill towards all, peace on earth. If there's a God, then that's the word. There shall be peace. There shall be peace.